Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock, joined by my buddy Matt Friedman from the Action Network and Fantasy Labs on this show. I have a couple news and notes things to break down, and I wanted to bring Matt on the show specifically to talk about Antonio Brown and his recent court hearing and how I think that impacts. And really, there's just been chatter about Antonio Brown more on Twitter these last few weeks than there had been in weeks past. But he got usurped at the top of this show by Deebo Samuel, has a Jones fracture in his foot, Matt. And, you know, a mantra I just have always had is don't draft injured players. They're going to get injured enough in the season. Guys are going to continue to get injured throughout off-season training camps and stuff like that. Just don't do it. And I'm wondering if you agree with that take as it pertains to this specific injury with Deebo.
Yeah, I think in a worst-case scenario, you get this idea that Deebo is going to miss only 2 to 4 games and you draft him, and then he turns into last year's AJ Green, where he just actually sits out the whole season and you don't get any benefit from him. I think if you're going to seek risk by going after players who have injury issues associated with them, the guys you probably want are the, quote unquote, like injury prone players who actually have a chance of staying healthy for the entire year. So like Will Fuller is healthy, like he has a chance of actually playing an entire season, but he's still being drafted, in some leagues outside of the top 30 at the position. But if he's healthy, he could actually end up being a wide receiver one, and he has a chance of being healthy, where someone like Deebo, yeah, you're right. He's not healthy right now. He might miss only the first couple of games of the season, and maybe he comes back and he's fully healthy. But there is significant injury risk associated with him. They could bring him back early, in which case he could suffer another sort of injury or re-injure the foot. He could actually play the entire season but have less efficiency, in which case that's also kind of like a worst case scenario where you're using him in your lineups, but he's submarining your team and your ability to win games.
I think that's the worst case. The worst case is he comes back, he's like 80-90% healthy. Yeah. The team knows he's not 100%, so they're like he probably never practices on like maybe he does the Friday walkthrough, and that's right. The only practice he does all year. So they're not drawing stuff up for him. Ayuk is earning a bigger role. Jalen Hurd is earning a bigger role. Kendrick Bourne is like swapping in and out with him. They're like playing 50-50 snaps. And like that's the actually you would rather him just straight up not play. Right. You'd rather him go sit on the sideline and not play and play in week 6 or whatever, because getting 50% of a guy at wide receiver, I mean, it's literally the worst case scenario.
Yeah, there are multiple ways that these injured guys entering the season can screw you. So I think probably best to avoid them. And the thing is, that just means that it's not like, oh, we drop him down our rankings and then we draft him at his ADP. His ADP is never going to drop far enough to reflect accurately the injury risk that he now has.
Yeah, no, completely. So like he wasn't a guy I was interested in either, because I don't I'm not a subscriber to, well, first of all, I'm not like a Shanahan disciple. Like there are these dudes on Twitter who will just tell you, Shanahan is the greatest and he'll scheme anyone up, and just like they're just those people who feel about Kyle Shanahan that way, and I am not one of those folks. But also, like, they throw enough to the running backs that even their wide receiver one kind of has to be considered like the 2A option, because Kittle will lead them in targets pretty much no matter what. Kittle is going to lead them in red zone targets pretty much no matter what. But they run so much on the goal line and they throw to their running backs so often that, like, what really, like, Deebo's 90th percentile season, his uninjured 90th percentile season is 75 catches, 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns, right? Like that's the breakout year, which is like, that's a great season. That's a top 10 wide receiver season for sure. But also it's going to come with some weeks of like 3 for 16 for sure, just as the nature of the way that offense works.
Yeah, exactly. If Deebo were fully healthy, you'd think that maybe he had some kind of DJ Moore second season type of upside where, collectively he has 1,200 yards. But yeah, with the injury risk now, I think it's very unlikely he approaches those numbers.
Yeah. So are you drafting Jalen Hurd? Are you making waiver claims in Dynasty for Trent Taylor? Are we drafting Brandon Ayuk? Is Ross Dwelly going to be an every down player? I mean, I actually do think for the 49ers offensive plan, if he were to miss time like that, it's a pretty big bummer.
Oh, it totally is, because I don't think you can assume that Ayuk is a one for one replacement. You know, Ayuk has some potential certainly as a first rounder, and he was, you know, productive his sophomore season, but that was in junior college. And then it wasn't until his senior season that he had a breakout season in the FCS. So, you know, despite his draft pedigree and, you know, his, you know, slightly above average athleticism, I don't think there's reason to just assume that Ayuk suddenly steps into the Deebo Samuel role, and we should expect, you know, 1,000 yards, 1,100 yards from Ayuk. Long term, I still like Ayuk probably more than most people for Dynasty, but, you know, that's the longer term play. Thinking for 2020, I think Kittle is the guy who benefits the most from this, and that I think, you know, his target share maybe bumps up from something like 22 to 24 or 25%. But then the rest of those targets, there are the rest of those opportunities that would have gone to Deebo, I think they get distributed roughly evenly amongst, you know, that quagmire at wide receiver, you know, Bourne, Hurd, maybe even Dante Pettis, Trent Taylor.
I can't even think about Dante Pettis as a guy who gets run. It's just like, it's just a foreign experience.
No, it's just, there are so many other guys who might get 1 to 2 extra targets per game because of this, that it's just hard to be enthusiastic about any one player as someone who really massively benefits because of the Samuel injury.
Yeah, I think that is, I think that's pretty legitimate. We don't know how much time Jalen Hurd is going to move, or how much time he is going to, I can't talk right now. We don't know how much time Deebo Samuel is going to miss. So what I did is I moved like 1.5% of Deebo's target share to Hurd. I don't want to let it scale quite yet. Now, if we get a report in a month that Hurd has an infection, or the doctors found something they didn't expect, or whatever, then you can make things a little bit different at that point. But overall, just the 49ers passing game outside of Kittle, I'm not really investing all that much is the main takeaway there. And some people really like Deebo Samuel. Maybe some of the same people that really liked Dante Pettis last offseason for whatever reason. But I just, he wasn't a guy I was drafting much of anyways. So I did see this bandied about though, Matt, which was, well, why don't the 49ers just go out and sign Antonio Brown now? He had his criminal trial hearing or whatever last week, and he got assigned to 200 hours of probation, or 200 hours of community service and probation and stuff like that. And this kind of went unnoticed, but to me, I actually thought this was big news, because obviously Antonio Brown can't play in the NFL if he is literally in jail. And I got to say, if you were making a money line of will Antonio Brown play in the NFL in 2020, I think the line's got to be like minus 115, yes, like plus 105, no, at this point.
So you think it's likelier that he plays?
I think it's likelier he plays. I think we've seen enough of, you know, working out with Lamar and working out with Haskins, and like we've heard enough chatter of like, you know, the Buccaneers say they don't want him, but there's been a couple coaches have been like, well, you know, I mean, Antonio Brown is a pretty good player. Like, I think that maybe that's a little bit too optimistic. Maybe the other way. Maybe it's plus 110, yes, minus 110, no. Maybe that's the right. Either way,
you're putting it pretty close to 50%. You know, like pretty close to a coin flip is where you're putting it. I don't know. This, something like this, it feels like the Talebian thing, where it's just like, it's so hard to know on something like this. But what we do know is that if it does happen, if Antonio Brown does end up playing with an NFL team, then he actually does have the potential to be a wide receiver one this year.
Yeah, like for sure.
That could easily happen, especially.
Yeah, it's asymmetric. It's asymmetric risk, which is like, okay, right. Antonio Brown, he'll cost you a 13th round pick right now. The average 13th round pick like doesn't even record a point for you at all over the course of a season. Antonio Brown is either going to give you 0 points or like 220 PPR points with no ranges in between those two.
Right. Yeah, and that's perfect. So I think the question is, where do you take him? So you and I are in an expert draft right now. There have been 54 wide receivers going off the board. We're in the 12th round. It feels like
my team in this, by the way, I really wish we were playing this one out for money just as we're going through it. I love my team in this one.
Yeah, but it feels like this could be, getting pretty close to Antonio Brown time. You know, maybe you take him in the wide receiver 60 range. But I think there are a few players like this. I don't want to say Josh Gordon is exactly the same because it's just, break my heart. But I think there are players.
At this point, though, we've now seen Gordon active for a team and not been usable for fantasy, but not been oh, wow, this guy is swinging leagues. Like, he played for the Patriots last year. He was fine. He played for the Seahawks last year and was losing snaps too. Malik Turner, right? Which is at the point of it's cool for Josh Gordon to be on teams. He was, and part of the reason why you and I feel so, why we love him so much is that he was the big RotoViz victory, right? Yeah. Like, that was when we started the site and we were like, go draft this guy, get him in all your formats. And people were like, what, this guy? No way, not a chance, no how. And he owned, obviously. And so that was great. And we have all these positive memories associated with him. But I don't find myself being loosey with the football with Josh Gordon this year. Whereas Josh Gordon or Andy Isabella, two total lotto scratch offs, right? And I think I prefer the unknown Rorschach blotch of Isabella over Josh Gordon.
Yeah, Izzy all day long. Yeah, but still sentimental about Josh Gordon. But the idea is, in your later rounds, you at least want to think outside of the box of where is the upside, because it doesn't matter in these later picks. Like, if you have a guy,
what are you going to take? Emmanuel Sanders, who absolute best case season, he ends up fourth on the Saints in receptions. Like, he's going to get outproduced by Jared Cook, almost, and he'll probably get hurt at some point too. So it's just and that's the question you're asking yourself, Justin Jefferson or Antonio Brown, I think at this point you just are like, Antonio Brown clearly has more ability to win my league than these guys.
Yeah, exactly. So Antonio Brown, as the guy who, called the top on Antonio Brown, I still think
you really did. Yeah.
I will never have a better moment than that. But I think now, when you're at the bottom, there actually is value in all of your leagues, wherever Antonio Brown is concerned. In Dynasty, even you can probably trade for him pretty cheaply. Someone has his rights there, and in redraft, you can get him in the later rounds. I mean, it feels weird to say that. Yeah, I think Antonio Brown is a value, but I think that's unquestionably the case.
Okay, here's a good question for you. I was talking with Anthony Amico about this last night. Say you have Antonio Brown in a dynasty league. I do have him in a couple that we did startups this offseason because, asymmetric upside. Is it better to immediately just, okay, let's say he signs with the Ravens or the 49ers, right? Doesn't really matter which one. Signs with a run-heavy team that is certainly not as great as him signing with the Buccaneers, right? Where you'd be like, you wouldn't really be tempted to trade him in that. But if he signs with the Ravens or the 49ers, I think there's a good chance that that it's like a hyperinflation, right? We're like, where people just get super excited for a week and then they start to think about it and they're like, maybe it's not great. Do you immediately, he signs with Baltimore and you immediately start sending out Antonio Brown for 2021 first round draft pick trades?
I think
you do.
I think so. Unless you are just really in win now mode and you think, okay, I know he's probably not going to have the usage I want him to have, but he still has that wide receiver one upside. And I think it's worth holding him because now is when I'm looking to win. But for the most part, I think you want the value. And at that point, the value would be trading Antonio Brown high and getting assets for the future.
Yeah. And I think obviously for a 2021 first, people make that trade, but I think it's a little bit more interesting when you try and make more median trades. What about Antonio Brown for Devin Singletary? If Antonio Brown signs, that's one where you kind of have to think about it.
I would probably take Devin Singletary there. because I do think he's the longer term asset. And, you know, getting more into the specifics of that situation, Zach Moss has potential, but it's not as if I'm like super sold on Zach Moss or anything. So I would probably still take the younger guy there.
Yeah, I think that is probably about fair. What about, okay, let's say in redraft, Antonio Brown does sign with like a situation neutral team, like not a situation where you're like, all right, this is fantastic. But just like, you know, he's fine. Maybe he'll be the top target. Maybe he'll be the second target or whatever. Where are we going to think about drafting him?
I mean, wide receiver 30, something like that. Maybe wide receiver 36, wide receiver 40. Like, okay. So at that point, like, would I rather have guys like Brandon Cooks, Henry Ruggs, you know, or Antonio Brown? Maybe, you know, probably Antonio Brown. So I think he's more in that low end wide receiver 3 category. Like where's Julian Edelman going? You know, as
I mean, I
like,
just, I don't know. I just would never take Julian Edelman. And Keel Harry is going to have more catches this year than Julian Edelman.
I mean, so Jarvis Landry, you know, like.
Yeah, I prefer Landry.
So, you know, Landry is going as a low end wide receiver 3. You know, Antonio Brown, I think, has that somewhat stable floor of a wide receiver 3 as long as he's actually staying in the league. But you know, upside for more. So, I mean, yeah, I think as a low end wide receiver 3 is probably where you draft him. My just main question is, does his ADP get inflated beyond that? I'm not sure if it does, because I think there's enough. I think two things. One, there's enough enthusiasm for guys like Terry McLaurin, DJ Shark, Michael Gallup, enough enthusiasm for those guys for them to be drafted ahead of Antonio Brown, and then enough pessimism around Antonio Brown just because he was out of the league last year. There are still legal issues around him. People think he's a locker room cancer, so they'll just be cautious and thinking that he won't play the whole season, and so they don't want to invest in him. So I think those two things would serve to push his ADP down to like the low end wide receiver 3 range, where at that point he provides value.
Is there any other burning fantasy football question that you are having right now? Anything you've been turning over in your mind before we get into some of these zero running back candidates?
Yeah. You know, one question, is about Tom Brady, and like, what version of Brady are we going to see this year? And so I've been creating projections for this upcoming season. And, you know, one of the big questions is just thinking about how does Brady fit in that Bruce Arians offense? And then what type of efficiency does he have on a per pass basis? Because obviously that impacts how many touchdowns that offense is going to have, and then impacts what you think of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and some of those tight ends. And just looking through the numbers and looking, you know, based on what Brady was able to do last year when he had Josh Gordon and when he didn't, and what that offense looked like with Gordon and without Gordon, and then what the Bruce Arians offense has looked like even with Jameis Winston last year, but then going back to Arizona and thinking about the last two fully healthy seasons for Carson Palmer, what that offense looked like there. I think Brady will be pretty close to like the 2015 to 2018 Brady instead of the, you know, latter half of the 2019 Brady. That's my impression of what we're going to get, or at least I think that is strongly within the range of outcomes. And if that's the case, then yeah, I think that offense could be pretty good. I think Ronald Jones, even if he isn't a huge yardage accumulator, could end up being a guy who scores like 10 to 12 touchdowns.
10 touchdowns. Yeah,
that's the big thing. I could see him being the goal line guy. And then, yeah, I think Mike Evans, just rack him up for another 1,000-yard season. And Chris Godwin is a guy who could have 1,200 yards. Like, I think that offense could be something pretty special.
So with Brady, I actually think it kind of is a binary type situation, and people have told me I'm wrong about this. So, you know, like for example, Leone really disagrees with me on this. Like, there are people that think that even if Tom Brady is like Gardner Minshew, right? Like just not not good anymore, right? Not able to push the ball down the field, not able to move around the pocket or whatever at all. It might not matter because Godwin and Evans and OJ Howard and Gronk and Ronald Jones and like Keyshawn Vaughn is probably above replacement level. Like the weapons might be so good that it might not matter. I am sort of the, I think it's probably better to be cautious with a 43-year-old quarterback just because we've never seen it before. And like, right. I know Brady doesn't get hurt. I know he is the GOAT and whatever, but like, I'm just, with every year you get older, I just feel like it becomes harder and harder to take those hits. And yeah. You know, it's just like, and at 43, like if he gets popped in the chin in the Buccaneers' first game, like how easy is it going to be for him to get back up, you know? And so I have some reservations about that offense as a whole, basically, just because of the age. And because he looked so bad last year.
Yeah, I mean, I have serious reservations where, like, we are either, I think, at a tipping point of Brady turning into final season Peyton Manning, where it's just absolutely disgusting.
And it came out of nowhere, yeah, by the way, for Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning was 4,000 yards, 35 touchdowns, and then he was done. And people don't remember this. They don't think about him on the same level. But this happened to Carson Palmer too. The Cardinals went 13-3, and then the next year, like it was just over. Like the Bruce Arians Cardinals offense, it was done and dusted. And Palmer was terrible.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. So even as you say, in that 2015 season when they were 13-3, they scored 29.4 points per game. In that second season. And right after that, they were 7-8-1, but that offense still scored 26.1 points per game. So like there's the possibility that even if you have a Brady who's not great with the weapons he has around him, I mean, look at that offense last year with Winston throwing 30 interceptions, they still had 28.6 points per game. Like that could still be a pretty good offense, but it's either, I think it's this binary, you're right, where it's like, it's a situation of Brady is at the tipping point and he becomes Peyton Manning and it's totally unbearable. Or what we saw last year was just a guy who had absolute trash around him. Like Julian Edelman as your number one receiver, like at 33 years old, that is suboptimal. And then like James White is your number two receiver, like Philip Dorsett, supplemental field stretcher, Mohamed Sanu as like the old guy who's brought in to play the slot in the middle of the season, Jacoby Myers, undrafted rookie, N'Keal Harry, you know, rookie who played seven games, Ben Watson.
I mean, they were playing Jacoby Myers like in the third week of the season. Like
I mean, this was like one of the worst offensive groups that you could put around Brady. And so, you know, even if Brady is slightly above average, or let's say he's just league average, I think with the weapons he's going to have around him, it could still be pretty decent because, yeah, as you said, Carson Palmer, 2016, it looked like he was pretty close to done, and that offense still scored 26.1 points per game. So I think there's the possibility that this offense really could be good.
I mean, I totally believe that there is the possibility of it. I think that maybe it's even more possible than – like maybe it's even more likely than unlikely that the Buccaneers, you know, are third in the NFL in yards per play and score so many points. But I think the downside is like we're getting Blaine Gabbert in like week eight, you know, and like that is horrendous downside, you know. Yeah,
the downside is there. Certainly it's there.
Yeah. Okay. So I did a zero running back target list on the site that came out yesterday. And I kind of just wanted to run through some of these guys and get your thoughts. Are you drafting at all Travion Williams or Giovanni Bernard with the idea that Joe Mixon may in fact hold out as Dalvin Cook has done?
No, not really. Although it's not a bad idea. And Travion Williams was really productive in college. My fear would be that we see something of a split, you know, between Giovanni Bernard and Travion Williams. And, you know, maybe even someone like Rodney Anderson comes back or something like that. But no, not really looking at those guys. Although I do think Gio has that perpetually high floor because of his receiving ability.
Yeah, I mean, so in the past, in games without Joe Mixon and or Jeremy Hill, Gio's just been like 15 PPR points per game. I think the difference is it seems like they kind of like Travion Williams, like they would be willing to give him some touches. Now that might be like a false reading or whatever, but like Travion, I guess Gio would be the guy you draft in redraft leagues. Travion would be the guy you'd take in like the 28th round of your dynasty startups, basically.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Ito Smith, Brian Hill, are we going back to the starting running back for the Falcons is dust, so therefore these other dusty guys have to have some zero running back value?
Yeah, and I hate to say that. I feel dirty saying that, but that's actually part of the zero RB thing is you're going to feel dirty doing it. And, you know, in that dirt, you find gold. But, yeah, I don't think – Ito Smith is not the guy where I want to invest. And I feel weird saying Brian Hill is the guy where I'd want to invest, but I think he's the guy I'd want. You know, Todd Gurley, if you do just kind of like the median type of projection, you know, maybe he stays healthy and, you know, he is the guy who scores touchdowns and what should be a pretty prolific offense. But if he is dust, if he does decline or suffers a big injury, Brian Hill looks like the guy who would be scoring touchdowns there. And I think he's, you know, maybe at worst, like a slightly below average runner, but like there's the chance that he's actually an above average runner. He was, you know, very prolific in college. And so there's possibility there. So Brian Hill is the guy I want. Ito Smith, not really much interest in him because I just don't see him being the bell cow. I don't see him getting the share of the rushing workload.
Yeah. Like at best, he would be Tevin Coleman to Brian Hill's Devonta Freeman, I guess.
Yeah, that's the way I'm viewing them. So Hill is someone who I'm interested in.
Yeah, Hill would be the one that you can target. Nyheim Hines tends to be a pretty polarizing one because he has absolutely no ceiling. Like really under no condition is Nyheim Hines ever winning your league. He is for like super extreme zero running back teams that like don't take a running back until like Cam Akers in the sixth round or whatever, where like literally you just need someone who can get you 4 points some weeks.
Yeah. Like you would hope that in some sort of peak scenario, things break right where he has some sort of like Tariq Cohen season from a couple of years ago or some sort of like peak Darren Sproles type of season. But I don't really see that happening with Nyheim Hines because of the guys he has in front of him. And then even like some of the guys he has behind him, you know, like if let's say Marlon Mack and Jonathan Taylor both suffer some sort of injury, I don't know if that really changes anything for Nyheim Hines. I just think it means like someone like Jordan Wilkins is going to end up having more of a workload, or, you know, like Jonathan Williams, like someone will emerge who can actually run between the tackles. That's not Nyheim Hines. So even if there's an injury to someone ahead of him, which is like kind of part of like the zero RB mentality that like it's a tough position, there's a lot of churn there, I just still don't see that meaning anything like overly good in extra abundance for Nyheim Hines.
So Hines would be someone who I would not take in best ball. Like I know we don't have the best ball championship right now, but even in like best ball tens or the FFPC ones or on drafters, like I wouldn't really be that interested in selecting him. But in like the Football Guys Players Championship and like these other leagues where, you know, if you pick 10th, you don't really want to take a running back until like the third or fourth round, because you're just going to be just hemorrhaging value at that point. Like, and if you in that situation, if you want to take Hines, like I'm cool with that there. Like I'm pretty cool taking Hines there, basically.
Yeah, even then, I think it's tough because I want guys even in those later rounds who I could see if things break right for them, because you have to have some degree of luck to win a championship. Sure. And so like, I want to think about what it is that happens when I get lucky. And if what I'm hoping happens, is that like, oh, Nyheim Hines gets more targets than I'm anticipating. Like, that's not the type of luck I want to try to leverage. Like the luck is, oh, someone got injured and now this guy I drafted in the 14th round is the starting running back on his team. And so like, I'm just looking for those types of guys, and Nyheim Hines, I just don't see it with him.
Yeah, I think that is probably True. Okay. Next guy. I actually think sneakily, Darrington Evans is in the Tony Pollard, Chase Edmonds, Latavius Murray tier of one injury, and this dude's cranking out 19 PPR points a week, no problem.
Yeah. Evans could be something pretty special. As you say, he's just an injury away, even though he has like the Terminator Derrick Henry playing in front of him. Evans is just an injury away. And, you know, I think he has even the whiff of standalone value on his own. Like, there is a scenario in which Henry just doesn't have the usage this year that people are expecting. You know, maybe they think, okay, we want to have him more for the stretch run, so we're going to use Evans just a little bit earlier on in the season. You know, Evans, instead of having like 18% of the rushing share, maybe could have like 30-35% of the rushing share. Like, that is within the range of outcomes, and he's going so late under the assumption that he's just going to get nothing. But he was drafted in the third round, and he is just an injury away. So yeah, Evans is
Also 1 year away removed from giving Deion Lewis 214 touches.
Right, exactly. So Evans is one of those guys that you can get super late in drafts, who does provide, I think, some outsized value, both as just kind of like a pure handcuff and as a potential change of pace.
Yeah, I think that one is likely true. Nothing big to say about Latavius Murray. He'll be on your roster. It kind of sucks because he's a roster clogger. You'll never be able to start him while Kamara is healthy. There'll be some weeks where he'll score two touchdowns some week when Kamara is healthy. But if and when Kamara misses time, you know, it's very, very similar to Chase Edmonds and those guys. Just lock it up. If I was doing the draft best ball championship, if they had that still, he'd be a guy I'd be looking to get at like a 25-30% kind of portfolio clip. I think like that would be the right way to use him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree there.
All right. The Chargers running backs, Justin Jackson and Josh Kelly. I think these guys are fascinating because if either one of them clearly beats out the other one, I think that guy could be 200 PPR points, you know, because I mean, what do we think the max expectation for Eckler touches would be? Something like maybe he gets 250 touches, but even that seems like quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm with you in that, Austin Eckler, as much as I like him, we should probably have some, some pessimism about, you know, his potential usage. I think he's one of the best receiving backs in the league, but I don't see him going above or much more above 150 carries, maybe like 180 carries. And so that does open the door for someone like Joshua Kelly, and he's the guy that I'm backing as opposed to Justin Jackson. Kelly's just he's bigger. He's got good athleticism. He was productive enough in college. I don't think he's like a one for one Melvin Gordon replacement, but I do think he's going.
You don't even want to be a one for one Melvin Gordon replacement because Melvin Gordon sucks.
Yeah, but I do think he's going to have something of like the Melvin Gordon function within that offense, where if things break right, he could end up being like the goal line guy. So that's where I'm going to be playing it.
Yeah. So I actually kind of like taking both of these dudes in some drafts, like taking Justin Jackson in the 13th round, taking Josh Kelly in the 16th round. And, you know, I guess a point that Noah Riddell made to me when we did a show a couple weeks ago is just the point you just made, which is Kelly is like real running back sized, right? He is 215 pounds, had multiple 220 carry seasons at UCLA, though. Justin Jackson, I mean, not to shortchange him, he ran for 1,000 yards in four straight seasons in college.
Prolific,
Yeah. So, and obviously in the event of an Eckler injury, I think both of these guys have value. Though, it also is true that the Chargers offense that we have come to know over the last few years of like lots of checkdowns, lots of completions, a lot of touchdowns to go around, you know, that's not going to be the offense they have this year, even if Tyrod is the quarterback, right? Like, they're just not going to be as good of an offense overall.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Yeah. All right, Chase Edmonds. Again, you know, very similar. Like, and well, I guess Edmonds is a really great selection. We all agree as like a, you know, potential breakout guy. But like, I mean, they're going to run so many plays. Do you think that there is a complementary role there for Edmonds in terms of like, you know, maybe he becomes someone that you can sometimes start in your flex or running back to during the bye weeks?
I'm kind of doubtful on that. And so I think there are two things that factor into this. One is the assumption that they're going to run a lot of plays. And I do think they're going to run a lot of plays, but the enthusiasm that we had last year entering the season wasn't really met by how many plays that they ran per game. And so maybe they just don't play as fast as we think they're going to. So that's one part of this. And then the other part is I do expect them to continue to pass pretty frequently, you know, with the addition of DeAndre Hopkins. Let's say that someone like Christian Kirk takes another step forward. Andy Isabella takes another step forward. And then Kenyon Drake is, I think, an above average pass catcher out of the backfield. Maybe, you know, they just don't rely on someone like Chase Edmonds quite as much as we think they will. And then also, it's not like I'm going to stand for Eno Benjamin, but he's, you know, out of the rookie running backs, he was one of the better pass catchers, you know, entering the draft. And so, you know, there's the possibility that he actually takes some usage away from Chase Edmonds. So I'm not super optimistic on Chase Edmonds this year.
Oh, so you're not in on Edmonds as like a legit zero RB target?
I mean, I see it, but I'm just a little bit too worried about Kenyon Drake and then also Eno Benjamin, like about the usage that I think Drake is going to get on his own, and then the possibility of Benjamin overtaking Edmonds.
All right. Philip Lindsay. Just let's get as short on Melvin Gordon as we can. Not only will we not be drafting Melvin Gordon where he goes, but we will actually be taking his direct competitor. You in or you out?
I don't know. That one's tough for me because I would say like
you would hate to tout an undrafted player even 3 years after they were undrafted. I know you love draft capital so much.
Well, it's the thing is I always kind of have felt that Gordon sucked. And so he feels very much like just the Denver, you know, Rocky Mountain version of Todd Gurley in Atlanta, where, you know, if I create a median projection for this guy,
he actually looks good.
Yeah, it's going to look like, all right, you know what, this guy actually might not be horrible this year, but I don't want exposure to him. You know, like there's the difference between what the median is and like the downside risk that a guy has. And I think Gordon does have a lot of downside risk. And so, yeah, that would lead me to think that Philip Lindsay is someone who offers value. The thing that kind of gets me about Lindsay is that he's not nearly as good of a pass catcher
as you think he would be just like looking at him. Yeah.
Looking at him and knowing that like, oh, this guy ran a 4.38 at his pro day 2 years ago, you would think, oh, this guy should be a pretty good pass catcher. Like this guy has some Austin Eckler type of potential, but he really doesn't. He hasn't been much of a playmaker as a receiver. And so to think like, okay, this guy who's like 180, 190 pounds, who's kind of just like a receiver only, or, you know, like maybe a little bit of pass catching ability, like that's the guy that I'm going to put my chips in when the other guy who was just paid a whole lot of money to be like the goal line back and who's actually a better pass catcher, like when that guy fails, like, I just feel a little uncertain about that, but I have to acknowledge Lindsay has been an awesome runner for the past 2 years.
Yeah. But even if he ends up in a timeshare with Melvin and he gets the, like you could totally see him being the, do you remember when Sean Green and LaDainian Tomlinson were both on the Jets and Sean Green got every second and eight, you know, the gross up the gut runs, and then LaDainian would get all the targets and all the outside sweeps. Like you could totally see Philip Lindsay getting all of the terrible carries and Melvin Gordon getting all of the targets and all of the goal line work.
Yeah, or like it makes me think of like the Willie Parker Jerome Bettis situation back in the day, where like Willie Parker would have like 1,000 yards, and then Jerome Bettis would get all the touchdowns. Like I could see Melvin Gordon being the guy who gets all the touchdowns and like all the targets. And then it's like, what is that worth for Philip Lindsay? That's like just sort of like empty calories, but he's not getting any protein in there.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that Philip Lindsay could be the empty protein guy. Duke Johnson, is it like finally enough? Is it just finally enough with him? Or I actually think that the fact that David Johnson looked so dusted off last year and was getting benched by the Cardinals at the end of the season, like maybe literally Duke Johnson will finally play on a team that will have no choice but to give him the ball. Like is Buddy Howell taking carries away from Duke Johnson? I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, could you even name Buddy Howell's real first name?
I do know it because of the way we do projections. Like, we have to use his it's Gregory, I think.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I mean, like, there are guys on that team on the depth chart after Duke Johnson who are, like, literally nameless. You know, like, I don't know if I could name them. Like, Caron Higdon, Scotty Phillips. Like, they're just a whole bunch of nobodies after Duke Johnson.
Former Oakland Raiders cornerback Tywan Jones.
No, I think he's on the Bills now.
There we go.
I mean, it's just – it's.
Like, I have no idea.
And then there's David Johnson, you know, in front of him. And I just – yeah, he looked dusted. Like, it has been legit, like, 3 years now since David Johnson – looked like, you know, himself. I do think that this is like the Duke Johnson season. Like it feels to me like Duke Johnson is.
I mean, we've all said it so many times that, right, that we got to believe it.
I mean, the Texans just keep finding ways of putting someone like Carlos Hyde in front of Duke Johnson. But, you know, even then, I think that gives Duke Johnson a relatively high floor, you know, like year to year in terms of like the scrimmage yards that he's going to have, the receptions that he's going to have, and the possibility, you know, for touchdowns. Like, I think on the low end, Duke Johnson is going to have, let's say, like 5 to 8 touchdowns with, you know, like 700 yards as like the bottom. But I think like 800 yards-ish is more of like a reasonable outcome with, you know, like 40 to 50 receptions. I think that's the low end. The high end is David Johnson is just done and Duke Johnson has like 1400, 1500 yards. Like that is a possibility, you know, with like 8 to 12 touchdowns. Duke Johnson to me, like he is the number one zero RB guy that I want this year.
Duke Johnson, number one, huh? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I think it's good.
I mean, I'm the perpetual optimist here. You know, I thought Duke Johnson was pretty comparable to someone like LeSean McCoy when he entered the league, just in terms of his like his size, his production profile from college, things like that. I still think he has that capability. On a per-touch basis, he's a pretty efficient player. There's no reason to think that you can't just give him a few more touches.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Tarik Cohen. This is my upside case for him. They target him down the field, and he just has to get lucky on 4 of those deep targets turning into long touchdowns to take him from being completely useless to a guy who is going to have a good win rate in 2020?
No. I want nothing. I really want nothing to do with him. Like what okay. we like what people are clinging to is the 2018 season in which he was super efficient. Like he's not going to have 8 yards per target this upcoming season.
Literally, it is just variance. Like it's just luck.
Right. Yeah. Like you have to hope that there's just a whole bunch of variance, both in terms of like his ability to turn touches into yards and touches into touchdowns. And like those things are correlated. So he just has to break a couple long plays, but I don't know, man. I do expect that Chicago offense to be better this year than it was last year, in part because I do think Nick Foles is going to end up starting a pretty significant number of games. But I still don't think that translates into extra or a lot of extra production for Tarik Cohen. I want to avoid him.
Yeah, I mean, the other argument for him would be David Montgomery injury. His competition is Ryan Nall. And I guess Taquan Mizell, who actually converted to wide receiver. So, like, he just has very, very little competition. Some teams have good third running backs. The Houston Texans and the Chicago Bears have no investment at that position whatsoever.
Okay. Is it too much for me to say that I, not that I like Ryan Nall, like
I have Ryan Nall on some dynasty teams.
No, I actually don't. I wish I did. No, but like Ryan Nall, like he's, I don't know.
He's kind of an interesting player.
He's the type of guy that, when he enters the league, I like more than I should, but I'm like, ooh, that guy's
well, he's always good. He's always good in preseason DFS because yes. they will give him a couple targets in the second halves of games.
Yeah.
And, so that just, you'll never forget the guys who are good to you in preseason DFS.
Yeah, Nall feels like the kind of guy where if something goes wrong with David Montgomery, Nall could become like Peyton Hillis light or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, I won't lie and say that I have zero interest in Ryan Nall, but so whatever. Okay, Matt Breida, we're starting to get into the more expensive guys now. I mean, it's very simple with Breida. Jordan Howard, not an explosive player. Matt Breida, fastest guy in the NFL, fastest ball carrier in the NFL last year per NFL Next Gen Stats. Probably, I mean, he does have an obstacle on passing downs in the form of R. Laird, but I mean, Breida just very clearly gonna be the man.
Yeah, I agree with that. And there's the possibility, in fact, I'd say the likelihood that. You know, we see in this Chan Gailey offense a team that has to play from behind, and so they are, you know, more in a pass favoring mode. And you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think, has the ability to spread the ball around to running backs, and so Breida, I could see being the guy who actually gets a pretty significant size of the usage. In that backfield, and I think out of all of the guys there. You know, Howard, Laird, Kalen Ballage, he's the one who is probably the most well-rounded of those backs. And so, you know, I could see him being something like the pass-leaning option who also has three-down potential.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Breida now is like he's officially like trendy. Like,
yeah.
Like there was a time where the market was keeping him and Jordan Howard pretty close, and now that's starting to diverge as people realize that. What are we doing with Jordan Howard? Like, what's the upside here? You know, what are we doing? Right. Okay, Ronald Jones. I think you and I both agree. It's actually very similar to Matt Breida, where like Keyshawn Vaughn is the boring guy. Ronald Jones is the guy who can have, you know, a bunch of long touchdowns over the course of a year. I actually looked this up using the RotoViz tools. Out of Peyton Barber, Dare, and even TJ Logan last year, the only Buccaneers running back who finished with more fantasy points over expectation based on the location of their touches was Ronald Jones.
Yeah, Jones, he's being undervalued right now. You know, as the running back, you know, 33-ish, something like that, off the board, he's being undervalued, I think, pretty significantly.
And I mean, like, there's totally a scenario where he just sucks, right? Where Brady is like, this guy with the fumbles and he can't pass block and he can't learn anything. Like, I don't want to play with this guy at all.
There's some damn it Donald potential, clearly, with Ronald Jones. But there's also the potential that he's a running back one. Because, like, it's – I mean, he just ran with, like, juice that other guys did not have on that team last year. And, you know, he's actually still younger than Keyshawn Vaughn. He was productive immediately in college. Last year, he had 1,000 yards from scrimmage and was a better receiving back than I think people gave him credit for.
I don't think people like believe that when you tell that to them, that Ronald Jones had 1,000 yards from scrimmage last year. He really did, and 8 touchdowns.
I know. People just, they don't believe that he was actually hashtag not horrible last year. He sucked as a pass blocker, but like, fine. Like there's maybe some variance in that. You know, like he could be a little bit better in pass blocking this year. He could actually improve again as a runner, improve as a receiver. This offense could be good. Like Ronald Jones has, I mean, I don't want to like be ridiculous, but like he actually has the possibility for like 1,500 yards from scrimmage and like 10 to 12 touchdowns. Like that's not unfathomable.
Well, it goes back to our earlier conversation about the Buccaneers as a whole. Like if you're buying Brady as QB8, Godwin and Evans gone before the end of the, you know, before the end of the third round, and Gronk as what does he go? Is like tight end 9 now. Yeah. Like if you're buying all of those things, you can't then say, well, Ronald Jones can't win you your league because you're just saying, blah. Like, and I mean, maybe there are also probably people who think of Keyshawn Vaughn this way, which I don't. I think that Keyshawn Vaughn could have like a real James White ass season, right? Of just like 3.9 yards per carry, 46 catches, like, you know, like that could totally happen. But it just, I don't know. Now, I'm just not into Keyshawn Vaughn. I know other people who are good at fantasy like him, but it, yeah, it's just not great.
Yeah, I'm not feeling Keyshawn Vaughn. Like, I get it. Like, I feel like if you drafted early, you know, before the actual NFL draft and you were on Keyshawn Vaughn, you know, you had a sharp eye and you got value there. I think if you're, you know, after the fact drafting him now, you're probably drafting into an inflated market and it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely agree. Number three on my list, it's Damian Williams, dude. It's Damian. How can it not be Damian? How can you look at this organization and be like, it's not Damian? He's gonna catch passes. The team's already said that he's gonna start as the running back. Like, he'll be the 1A to Clyde Edwards-Helaire's 1B. And there's gotta be what? There is a 5% chance Clyde Edwards-Helaire is not good enough to be a running back in the NFL, maybe 3%, but like that's somewhere in there. And I don't know, even when Damian shifts to being the second running back, I mean, he's still playing for the Chiefs, so he's still like, you know, I'm going back to the well. I can't help myself.
I mean, what you do know is that Williams is going outside of the top 30, you know, outside of the top 32, and so you're going to have some luck with any of these backs. And what you do know is that if Williams somehow finds himself in the lead back role, you know what he can do in that role.
You know, yeah, like, by hook or by crook, you know, yeah. If he is in fact the lead running back for the Chiefs, you know you're getting a lot of fantasy points.
Right. So that's the way I would like to approach it. And so from that way, I think you're right. Like, if circumstances converge where Williams finds himself as the lead back, you know what he can do. And it is something that is like RB1 caliber. And so if you have a player like that, who has that proven record in that role, and all it takes is either like the Chiefs don't like Edwards-Helaire as much as we think they're going to, or he suffers an injury or something like that. If that's all it takes, and you can,
or it just is like rookie running backs. Sometimes they don't get all the touches right away.
Right.
Like, yeah. Sometimes that just happens. Like Miles Sanders, clearly better than Jordan Howard. And it took him, it was what, until week 10 to the first time he got like 20 touches.
Yeah. I think that's possible. And so if you can get a guy like that outside of the top 30 at the position, I think you are finding untapped value there. So I do like that call. It's easy to be pessimistic about it because, like, you just look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire and the draft capital and the skill set he has, and you think, yeah, like, this guy's gonna crush. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking for, you know, that asymmetric risk, Damian Williams, he has the upside for it.
Well, not only, but I actually think he is like kind of the guy who, if you have to start him in week 9 because four of your other dudes got hurt, you're not like, oh, well, I'm drawing dead. Like, he'll still have some random spike weeks just because he plays for the Chiefs, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. And if you know, let's think of kind of like best ball scenarios. I don't hate, you know, stacking Damian Williams with a whole bunch of other Chiefs players, you know, just kind of hoping that things break a certain way, that the Chiefs are awesome, and then, you know, somehow he gets more touchdowns than you would maybe expect, you know, like stacking him with guys like Hill or Kelsey, or, you know, even like Hardman, Sammy Watkins. I like that situation.
Yeah. Okay. Second on the list, Tony Pollard. Unimpeachable. He is the quintessential zero running back target, where he'll have some, like, I mean, he even had a couple startable weeks for best ball last year where you were using his scores. But he is, you know, if Ezekiel Elliott gets injured, his competition is Jordan Chun and Rico Dowdle, both who are undrafted free agents. He will be Christian McCaffrey if and when Zeke gets injured. He'll be the best, or here, this is a good thought experiment. Zeke retires from football tomorrow. Where does Pollard go in drafts?
Round one.
I literally think he goes fourth. I think he goes after Barkley, Kamara, and CMC?
I don't think he would go that high, but that's fine. He just, that creates value. I think he would go in the first round. I think latter half of first round. Like, I don't see people taking Pollard ahead of Derrick Henry or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think there are just too many people who kind of get stuck in the perspectives that they have. And so they'll look at someone like Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, and they'll be like, I've seen what those guys can do. I don't know if Tony Pollard is there, even though I like him. And then there will be other people like us who would be incredibly enthusiastic about Tony Pollard, and we would drive his price up. I don't think it would be top five, but I do think it would be first round.
Yeah, I mean, I would take him. I would take him in the first round for sure. I would have no reservations. Like, he's pretty much like, he or Edmonds are the guys that I'm trying to get in like every draft, more or less. Because again, if zero running back is going to work this year, it's going to be because one of those two guys hits, I think, or Latavius, or Philip Lindsay, maybe. Like, those are all guys who I think would correlate with zero running back teams having a high win rate.
Yeah, Tony Pollard is perfect. I mean, I think if we went through the scenario and Zeke retires, I think the Cowboys really don't miss a beat. Maybe the only beat that they miss is that they don't have at this point, they don't have a strong number two running back. That's where they could get bit by this later. But
Alfred Morris isn't on a team. He'd be back. He'd be back in the Cowboys within a week if Zeke retired, or Darren McFadden, or Felix Jones somehow.
Yeah, I was gonna say McFadden. Yeah, no. Yeah, Alf would step right in. But yeah, I mean, going back to his Memphis days where he was, you know, like the slot receiver hybrid running back. I mean, Pollard has just been so explosive on a per touch basis, and you still see that capability with him now.
Yeah. All right. If you had to guess, who do you think is still left? We have one name left.
Antonio Gibson.
No. This is like Sean's list last year, where this is actually a guy you have to spend a pick that matters on.
Alexander Mattison, Zach Moss. I don't know.
Cam Akers.
Okay. Cam Akers. Yeah. I just,
cause he's going in like the sixth round now.
Okay.
He actually has fallen as when the Rams first drafted him, he was like fourth, fifth round. Now he's like fifth, sixth round for what, I don't know why, but that's just the way ADP is going.
No. Yeah. I mean, I'm all in. I am as deep in Cam Akers as I can be, like, to the point where in Dynasty, I'm drafting him way before it's appropriate. Like, I wouldn't say I want Cam Akers number one. That's still Edwards-Helaire, but I have Akers number two, which is like blasphemous considering Jonathan Taylor is still on the board. But I think Akers, there are a few reasons to be very optimistic about what he can do this year. One of them would just be the fact that, like, that Rams offense, even though it was bad last year, it was still decent for a team that was bad. They scored 24.6 points per game last year. Like, they potentially could score more points this year. Like, there's the possibility they could be better this year. But then just outside of that.
Well, I actually think I would say it's likely, because you got to say, is Sean McVay someone who actually can figure things out? Can he watch the film? Can he understand what he has and make things better? Or did he just get really lucky the 1 year? And my opinion would be Sean McVay actually is really good at coaching, and he'll figure it out. And yeah, things sucked last year, but did they really? They scored the 11th most points in football and were 11th in yards per play, with everyone being like, the Rams suck, the Rams suck, the Rams suck. So, you know, I don't really know. Like, I actually kind of think there's room for the Rams off. And keep in mind, they also will not be wasting 250 touches to Todd Gurley, right? Todd Gurley was, throwing cement in the mix, right? Of slowing everything down. And they couldn't throw to their running backs anymore because Todd Gurley couldn't cut. And you're not going to have that problem with Cam Akers now.
Exactly. On a per touch basis last year, Gurley really slowed the offense down. So in McVay's first year in Los Angeles, they had, I think, 28.9 points per game. And this is like including playoffs. The second year they had 30.8 points per game. Last year, 24.6, you know, like, yeah, even if they just bump up to like 25, 26 points per game, like, there's significant just kind of like top down potential that this offense could be really good. And then thinking of Akers specifically, Yeah, man. Like I'm expecting him to take over and just run. Like he was an awesome recruit entering college. Some people maybe were disappointed with what he did at Florida State. I thought he looked pretty good considering his offensive line was trash. A better pass catching back than people kind of expected. Great athleticism with the 4.47 second 40 time at 217 pounds. Like that's fantastic. The five-star recruit entering college, just 21 years old. And then now like he could get 60% of his team's carries, maybe more. Like I think if the team were really satisfied with Daryl Henderson, they wouldn't have drafted Cam Akers. I think Akers is the type of guy you draft if you want to pile it on. Like, I think you look at Daryl Henderson and look at Malcolm Brown and you're like, nah, like we're giving it all to Cam Akers. So I think Akers, I mean, he has the potential to be something pretty close to what Todd Gurley was those first two McVay years in Los Angeles, which is like, I mean, RB1, like the RB1. So, I mean, Akers, I'm all in. I'm entirely in.
So the argument against Akers has to basically be that you believe the Rams to be so incompetent that the year after spending a third round pick on a running back, they spend a second round pick on a running back while they are in cap hell, right? To the point where they're having to cut productive players off their team just to save cap money, and that they are spending this second round pick, you know, their only source of affordable labor, as a compliment to their third round pick the year before. And you have to think like, okay, that's the way the Rams are approaching football, which just, it seems so bizarre to me. Like, I think spending the second round pick on Akers is them saying, Henderson can't play. Henderson is not good enough to play at this level.
Yeah. For the Akers pick not to pay off right now, like let's say he's going in the sixth round, for him not to return value, I think two things have to happen. One, the Rams have to be incompetent top down, where their entire offense just doesn't work in the way that we think it will. And then two, they have to be incompetent in the way that they distribute their touches to their running backs. I think even if just one of those things happens, Akers still pays off value. So the only way I think this Akers thing doesn't work out, you know, injury aside, is that it's just total incompetence from the Rams. And I'm not there yet.
Yeah, I'm not really there either. Were there any zero running back names that we missed that you really like? Seems like everyone loves Gibson more than me. I think there are too many cooks in the kitchen.
He's Tony Pollard, like, except bigger. Like, he literally played the Tony Pollard role the year after Pollard played it at Memphis. And yeah, he played it, I wouldn't say better, but like, I mean, there was no one more efficient on a per touch basis last year than Antonio Gibson. And then he just tore up the combine, you know, was drafted with a top 100 pick. And the guys he has in front of him, Darius Geis, who knows if he stays healthy, and then Adrian Peterson, like, who knows if the new coaching staff really wants to give Adrian Peterson a lot of work. And then even if he does, like, he's not going to be as explosive as Antonio Gibson. And like Gibson, most of his handoffs last year did not come out of the backfield. They were on jet sweeps. And so like, there's the question of like, can this guy actually play running back in the NFL? But he played running back a little bit in college. He was a running back in high school. I think he actually does have running back potential. He feels like rookie year David Johnson to me, where like he makes splash plays in the first half of the season and shows that he actually should be the guy. And then in the second half of the season, he actually kind of takes over as the lead back. Like, I think there is a clear path to fantasy viability for Antonio.
So I've been drafting him on Drafters because his ADP is like 190th. Like he's like totally free.
Beautiful.
But in the Football Guys Players Championship and in FFPC best ball, he goes at like pick 100. And so I'm not as interested there. I'd rather take Pollard or Edmonds.
It's harder, and it's a very market dependent, and you know, it's sort of like thinking of DraftKings versus FanDuel. You know, like you take guys on the site where they offer the most value. yeah, maybe you don't draft Antonio Gibson in the leagues where he's just very expensive, but you draft him in the leagues where, you know, there are a little more fish, you know, and so you can get away with drafting a guy like him, you know, when he offers a lot of value really late in your drafts. But I mean, Gibson, I can see the path forward for him. You know, like, I don't think it's actually all that hard of a path. You know, with someone like Damian Williams, like, we see the payoff that he could have if he actually becomes the starter or whatever it is. But I do think it's a little bit harder of a path for him. But Antonio Gibson, I mean, he just has to beat out one guy who's 35 and one guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy. Like, I can see that legitimately happening.
So I guess my counterpoint to that would be is, like, first of all, you have to assume some level of rational coaching from, I mean, they are the worst organization in pro football.
Yes.
And McKissick, Barber, Peterson, Geis, and let's not forget that Antonio Gandy-Golden probably is going to compete for those slot snaps that would make Gibson, you know, that little bit more valuable. And they give Steven Sims some carries. Like, it just seems like there are so many guys there that even if Gibson is that talented, he might just lose out on the volume that would be needed to make him a true breakout. But, like, I don't hate him or anything. It's just like there are a lot of cooks in that kitchen.
That's fair, but I view a lot of those cooks as being very expendable. Like McKissick,
that's
Barber,
true. Yeah.
Like, I don't know if both of those guys make the team. You know, one of them probably will, but I think that guy could probably be beaten out. Like, I think if Adrian Peterson can be beaten out, Barber can be beaten out. I just, you know, I'm probably too optimistic on Antonio Gibson. Like, I'll fully admit that, but I just see a guy who has such great athleticism, great production, and I just kind of see a really unsettled depth chart. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Washington is one of the most incompetent NFL franchises, if not the most incompetent, it probably is. And that offense really could be bad, but I don't know, man. I see a guy that I think has a lot of potential.
Yeah. I mean, he is a guy that you should really be trying to buy in, like, rookie leagues and stuff right now, if at all possible, or buy the dip if it doesn't happen his rookie year. Be like, you just be sending all the offers you can in the offseason. I'm in. Maybe I need to think a little bit more. Cause, like, also I'm doing a lot of this stuff thinking about projections, and, like, he just is projecting terribly for me because I'm giving six different players carries for Washington right now, you know?
Yeah. He's in that group of guys, and we really need, okay, a couple things. One, this touches on the difference between projections and rankings, because projections is
for sure
all about, like,
very, very different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with the rankings, you know, with those guys at the top of the board, you're taking upside into account, but you're also kind of thinking about the floor that these guys have. And then once you get past, I'd say, like, round five or something like that, I think much more about the upside that any of these players have, as opposed to, like, their median range of outcomes. And so someone like Gibson, yeah, like, his median projection is going to look like trash, but, like, his upside projection could just be massive. And that honestly is, like, all that I'm focusing on when I'm looking at these guys in later rounds.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Anyone else? I mean, I think that's a pretty exhaustive list of dudes. I know Karain threw out a couple other ones to me, but I can't really remember them off the top of my head.
One more, almost embarrassed to mention him, but Damian Harris,
that's a real thing now. Yeah.
Yeah. As a potential kind of, like, injury fill in for Sony Michel. And, like, it really wouldn't be the first time that, you know, the Patriots have taken a guy in the third round, done very little with him. Or I should just say day two, you know, think back to, was it like 2010, 2011, when in round two, they drafted Shane Vereen, and then round three, they drafted Stephen Ridley. Neither one of those guys did much as a rookie. And then they were basically the leaders in the backfield their second season. Like, I do see a scenario where Sony Michel, you know, even if he doesn't miss some time, but, you know, especially if he does miss some time, Damian Harris comes in as a guy who was, you know, productive for three straight seasons at Alabama, is at least, like, competent at catching the ball, and a guy that they spent a round three pick on last year. I could see him coming in and leading the backfield this year in what I expect to be more of a run-heavy scheme. So, you know, he's someone that you can get for basically free at this point, even though there are people who are starting to get on the Damian Harris hype train. You can still get him for very cheap.
Yeah, and he would be – so, like, he would be the guy who would earn enough good touches in terms of targets and red zone looks to, like, actually be viable even in a three-way split, basically. Is that sort of the supposition?
That would be my hope. I mean, I'll be honest. I'm scared of Rex Burkhead as the guy who could sort of claim that role. But Damian Harris, I think, you know, given the draft capital invested in him, what he did in Alabama, I do think that they would probably give him a shot. And I think that he could be useful enough as a runner, pretty much play the Sony Michel role, but also useful enough as a receiver to where maybe he gets more of the receiving workload than Sony Michel had. And then he gets the goal line opportunities. I would basically think of him as, like, hopefully what Sony Michel was. Except hopefully a little bit better.
Hopefully a little bit better than that. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, there we go. There is some news and notes, some zero running back targets. What do you guys have going on over at Labs and Action Network right now?
So, you know, Sean Corner, the odds maker, Chris Raymond, and I, we are doing our projections for the upcoming season, and we have our fantasy tools, which are going to be coming out for redraft leagues. I believe around 4th of July. So be sure to check that out. And then, you know, after that, I'm going to start putting out some strategy pieces. And Chris Raybon just recently published a strategy piece for best ball that you can check out for free at Action Network.
There we go. All right, Matt, thank you for joining the show. Everyone, thank you very much for listening. We will see you all next week.